This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In 1959, two physicists arrived at Bell Labs with apparently very little in common. One, an African-American from the rural South. The other, a German immigrant with a heavy accent. Yet Jim West and Gerhard Sessler immediately became both fast friends and professional colleagues. With each other's support and ideas, they invented the Electret microphone that's in every camcorder and cell phone. Both are members of the National Inventors Hall of Fame and still close friends. And the strange part is that many of us have similar stories. The kid you met the day you moved in next door, the coworker at the next desk, your college roommate, someone you met and just clicked with. In a new book, brothers Ori and Rom Brofman deconstruct the mechanism of that magic moment and explain how you can repeat it. Later in the program, Tift Merritt joins us to talk about her new CD, See You on the Moon. But first, if you have one of those stories where you clicked with somebody right off the bat, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Ori Brofman joins us now from the studios of KQED, our member station in San Francisco. The book is Click, The Magic of Instant Connections. And it's nice to have you with us today on Talk of the Nation.
Oh, it's great to be here, Neil.
And Ori, your book tells us the story of a man who does this professionally under some of the most demanding conditions imaginable, a hostage negotiator in San Jose who brings what you describe as a toolbox with him when called upon into these very desperate situations.
Yeah, it's this fantastic guy named Greg Sessler, and he is just incredibly passionate when you hear him talk about hostage negotiations. And you think, you know, if I'm putting myself in the situation of going and negotiating with a hostage, someone who's armed, it's a 15-hour type of ordeal. I'm going to come in there trying to intimidate the person, trying to make sure that they let go of the hostages.
Yeah, you're surrounded. Come out with your hands up.
Right. And what he does is very different, is he actually tries to make a connection with the hostage taker. And in a way, he actually exposes his own vulnerabilities, which was the biggest surprise for us. So he'll sit there and he'll talk to the hostage taker for 5-10 hours. And all of a sudden, the hostage taker will say something like, oh, you know, I had my mother just died last year. And while being very authentic, Greg says, oh, you know, that happened to me as well. I had that experience. And all of a sudden, it takes away the tension of the situation and builds trust. And he tells a story of one time being in San Jose where that happened, and a guy was taking a family hostage. Everyone was afraid that the guy would actually kill the family, would kill himself.
He was a three-striker if he
a
got
a three-striker, right. So you have nothing to lose,
forever.
Right?
Yeah.
And instead, they have this actually meaningful conversation. They click, even though one is a hostage taker, one's a hostage negotiator. And at the end of it, the hostage taker says, can I give you a hug? And you think, how can you possibly create that kind of relationship? It's, you know that the guy's going to jail. How do you create that kind of meaningful connection?
And the answer, it turns out, you describe it in your book, is vulnerability, that first key to gaining trust is by exposing some weakness of yours, and then the other person reciprocates.
What's interesting is that we're so hardwired to connect with vulnerability that when someone is vulnerable around us, we actually return the favor without even thinking about it. So that you can have a conversation like we are having now, and you can talk about the weather in Washington and the weather in San Francisco. Or you can kind of take it a step deeper and you can talk about, hey, what's something that's meaningful that's happened to you in the last week? Or who are you feeling closest to in your family right now? And just by taking it down to those levels of vulnerability, people instantly start building a level of trust with each other.
And again, it has to be authentic. You can't just come up to somebody and say, did your mother die recently? But if you can establish that sense of authenticity and establish that connection, then, well, something interesting happens in the brain as far as you can see it.
Right. So we automatically start trusting the other person. And it obviously has to be authentic. And two, it has to be appropriate, right? So if you meet someone right off the bat and you all of a sudden start delving into all of their deepest, darkest secrets, or you share yours, you're going to kind of freak people out. And obviously, you're not going to build a connection. Mm-hmm. There is a really interesting Harvard Business School study where they had the Harvard students sit in front of a computer, and they had to answer questions about what are things that you feel guilty about, what are some challenging times in your life. And imagine yourself sitting in front of a computer. You're probably going to basically lie. Who wants to share that information right in front of a computer? And in the second condition, they asked the exact same questions, but the computer started off by giving a vulnerable statement. And the computer
A vulnerable statement from a computer?
From a computer. So they wanted to make sure that, and again, remember, these are Harvard students who know that computers don't have souls. And
yeah.
So the computer said, this machine sometimes crashes, and it makes its users really upset. Are there times in your life where you feel like you've disappointed someone? And all of a sudden, the Harvard students completely open up, and they start telling all these stories about very, very, very personal stories about being the first person in their family to go to college, about sexual experiences. And just because the computer, who they know is an inanimate machine, opened up to them first.
It's one of the mechanisms that you describe for this magical connection. And you say magical because in a lot of different experiments, in a lot of different places, that's a word that people consistently use to describe it.
Exactly. And this was my brother's research. My brother's a psychologist. And what he found out is that when you ask people to think about a time in your life when you experienced a moment of magic, when you experienced that you were just incredibly connected to your environment or the people around you, people described very, very different types of scenarios. One person described their first kiss or their night at the prom, or another guy described going down the freeway at 120 miles an hour. But regardless of the situation that people described, they used the exact same emotions. And what this led him to believe is that there's a part in our brain that we tap into that is responsible for these magical experiences. And what's interesting about it is that even years down the road, whether it's in a relationship or meeting someone in a platonic way, simply recalling those magical experiences makes you experience them yet again.
Hmm. We want to get some listeners in on the conversation. We're talking with Ori Brofman, who's the co-author of Click, The Magic of Instant Connections, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. And Amanda's on the line with us from Kirkwood in Missouri.
Hi.
Hi.
One of my very dearest friends, he and I met on the very first day, our freshman year of college in 1995. He was one of the very first people I met when I went off to school. But before I'd spoken a word to him or even totally approached the group outside of our freshman week orientation class, I just told myself he is going to be my friend. And I can tell you exactly what he was wearing right down to the backpack all these years later.
And
we're still very good friends.
Really? And you continue to, do you remember that first conversation you had with him?
You know, that's just it. I don't even know what in the world we talked about, but I can tell you exactly what he was wearing. And in another ironic twist, he now lives about three blocks from me.
Interesting. Ori Brofman, one of the conditions that you describe in your book is a situation that is new to you, moving into a new neighborhood or your first day at college. That's going to be a situation where you might be especially receptive to this kind of magical connection.
Absolutely. Amanda's story is really heartening, and a lot of us have had that kind of experience where you move into a new situation, whether it's a college dorm or summer camp, whatever, and you just instantly connect with someone in a very, very deep way. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One is that it's very important to have what we call a defined community, a clearly defined community that you know that you're in this community together. So you're in the dorms together. This is now your new group of people, if you will. The second thing is kind of ironic is that when we share suffering with people, right, so that when you go through the hardships of moving to a new place and being scared together, that actually builds bonds incredibly quickly, which is why people in boot camp, for example, hit it off much better than people who just work in an office.
People on one side of the boot camp, they don't hit it off with their drill instructors necessarily.
They probably don't. But if they actually experience combat together, they will become much better friends even 20 years down the road. And what's also interesting about Amanda's comment is that it turns out, you know, when we have love at first sight, or whether it's platonic or not, we tend to dismiss it oftentimes. And it turns out that these kind of relationships are actually very long-lasting, but they're categorically different in terms of their tenor. The biggest difference is that these relationships tend to have much more passion in them than relationships that were formed by friends first or people who just kind of slowly developed into the relationship.
Amanda, you're still with us?
Yeah, I am.
Would you say that that's correct?
Maybe not. This person, I actually dated his roommate at the time, a long childhood friend of his, but that was, you know, it was pretty short-lived, but the three of us are all still very good friends. They're both married, and they both have kids of their own, and I'm with someone, but I can see how that would happen, but it's just not the case in this situation.
All right. Well, thanks very much for the call, and
congratulations
on your friendship.
Why, thank you.
Here's an email from Mike in Charlotte, North Carolina. My first day on the job as a new teacher, I heard Robert Hoderny give a speech to the students. We started working together on student activities and became close friends. We taught together for 13 years. He was best man at my wedding, and there's still not a day since he was killed by a drunk driver in 1996 that I have not thought of him. So obviously a professional situation. First day on the job, obviously we're very sorry for the subsequent circumstance, but nevertheless, first day on the job can be just as powerful as the first day at school.
Absolutely, and that you can have, it can be, we talk about it as love at first sight, but we talk about it interchangeably with professional, with romantic relationships, with purely platonic relationships. The same mechanisms seem to take effect.
We're talking with Ori Brofman, a co-author of Click, The Magic of Instant Connections. When we come back, we're going to be talking about Click accelerators. There are ways that you can think about situations or circumstances that might actually accelerate the process of this instant connection, this magical relationship with another person. Stay with us for that. I'm Neil Conan, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking with Ori Brofman about his book, Click, this hour. You know the feeling, 30 seconds into a conversation with someone you've accelerated from strangers to best friends. Like Paul and Nadia, strangers who met in a business meeting. She passed him a note reading, "I completely disagree with you." The next day, he proposed. Read on how they clicked in an excerpt at our website. Just go to npr.org, click on Talk of the Nation, and tell us your instant connection story. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. And let's go next to Christine. Christine with us from Portland.
Hey.
Hi there.
Hi. Hey, I think this is fascinating. I wrote a book about 15 years ago with my best friend that had us interviewing women around the country and around the world. And it was basically we were presenting the question of what matters most to you. And, I mean, we interviewed hundreds of people, and without fail, women just opened up, just instantly. And we tried years later to do the same kind of project involving men, and we got absolutely nowhere.
Cold shoulder.
So 15 years later, I now have this skill that I can do in line at a grocery store or at the airport or at the Goodwill, and my husband constantly looks at me and says, like, how did you do that? And I don't, you know, he's never really done that in 30 years of marriage, and so I'm curious if you find that this kind of instant connection is easier for women than it is for men.
I think it certainly comes more naturally for women to at least express vulnerability to each other. And I'm actually working these days with the Army of all people, and they're trying to figure out how do you get soldiers to open up to each other and create trust. And it's a challenge, and you really need to work at it. It sounds like there's another element going on, which is some people are just naturally better at being what we call high self-monitors. And someone who's a high self-monitor tends to match their emotional state to the other person. These kind of people tend to be natural-born clickers. And some people are just better at it naturally, and that doesn't necessarily come about because of gender differences.
Uh-huh.
But it's about matching your energy or your emotional state to the person who's next to you. And it turns out that high self-monitors tend to do much better in work relationships. They tend to get promoted more. They tend to be more close to the nucleus of the company because they're able to build these instant trust-based relationships.
Interesting. Well, it's, you know, I go through life now every day. If I have a positive comment about someone or a stranger, I say it instead of just thinking it. And, you know, what I've learned this last 15 years is that people are desperate for this kind of connection. So I really appreciate you exploring it and encouraging one and all. Way to go.
Thank you, Christine.
Yeah.
Okay. One of the interesting experiments that you describe in the book, we were talking about these accelerators, and one of the experiments involved figuring out who was the center of social activity in dormitories, and what you found was that almost always, it was the kid who had the room in the middle.
Right. And so these were dorms that were the old-fashioned types dorms where it looks like a motel. So there's all these dorms in a street hall. And you think, well, maybe the people in the center of the hall are naturally the most sociable, which is why they picked those rooms. But it turns out that the room assignments were completely random. So why is it the people at the end were the so-called outcasts and the people in the middle had a ton more friends? Well, the reason is that the people in the middle just were closer to their neighbors.
Physically closer.
Physically closer. And for every door down that you go down the dorm, for every door down, the likelihood of you making a connection with that person goes down by half. So you go down one door, it goes that the likelihood of making a connection goes down by half. You go down another door, it goes down by half again. You go down another door, it goes down by half again. The exact same thing happens when you look at scientists working together in a research laboratory, that they're much more likely to collaborate with someone who sits right next to them, regardless of the interests of the other person, than they are with someone down the hall or with someone on a different floor or, God forbid, someone in a different building.
Doesn't say much for telecommuting now, does it?
It doesn't. It actually changed my perspective on showing up in meetings as opposed to phoning in. The most important thing is that connection that you get when you're physically close to someone and those last few feet.
So proximity is one of the accelerators, the click accelerators we were talking about. Let's go next to Marcy. Marcy with us from Mechanicsville in Iowa.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. This is really interesting because I've been this type of person my entire life where people just kind of tend to open up to me a lot. And as far as clicking, you know, my husband and I met on a blind date. We clicked right away. One of my very, very good friends that I've had for a long time, we had that kind of relationship as well. And though I click with a lot of people, a lot, it seems to be very exhausting. And I don't know if that's because I'm extremely empathetic, which I am. But also, some people are very repellent to me. Like, I can't hardly stand to be in the same room with some people.
Really?
And it feels like my head's about to explode. I know that sounds very strange.
From what you can tell, do they feel the same about you?
Well, usually, because I tend to be also very, you can see, you know, I wear my emotions on my sleeve. You can tell exactly how I'm feeling, usually.
I read your book, Ori, and I found a lot about people connecting. I didn't find a lot about people repelling.
One of my friends, Rudy, he suggested that the follow-up book should be called Yik.
Well, Marcy might be your first subject.
Exactly. And it sounds like, Marcy, you're just a very open person who's very honest with your emotions, and that when you don't like someone, you make it really known. So in a way, that's actually, I think, a gift because you don't have the ambiguity of does he like me, does he not like me. It sounds like with you, we know where you stand. So I'm happy for your husband that he and you clicked on the first date and that he knew exactly where he stood from the get-go.
yeah, he did, and he still does.
Marcy, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Here's an email from Marlon. As a person of faith, I see these type of connections as divinely inspired. I'm currently in a fellowship program, and during the first seminar, we were not only introduced to the entire group, but also to our roommates for the weekend. My roommate and I instantly connected, sharing our personal experiences and talking into the wee hours of the morning. We discovered that we had a mutual friend, that we had both recently gotten married, practiced the same religion, had recently overcome similar challenges in our personal lives. The connection made it seem as if we had been friends forever. I knew in that moment that this was going to be a special friendship. And that's similar to the stories that we've heard in other contests. This from Micah in Kansas City, Missouri. My story's a little different. I never talked to the girl who always sat next to me in seventh grade. One day, someone else tried to sit in her seat. I stopped them immediately. That girl has since been my best friend for 16 years. So, it's interesting. Let's see if we can go next to this is Gary. Gary with us from Duluth.
Hi.
Hi.
I had an amazing connection that was an instant click to the company commander of a group of Marine commandos to which I was attached in Vietnam. And within 10 minutes of meeting this guy, I was finishing his sentences. He was finishing mine. We were inseparable right up until the time he was killed. And I missed him every single day of my life. We were like brothers.
I'm so sorry for your loss, Gary. That situation, though, you describe, finishing each other's sentences, Ori, that's one that comes up again time after time in your book.
It comes up all the time. And what's so interesting for me, and I'm loving hearing these calls, is you hear people remember something. This is from the Vietnam, right? So 30 years ago. And you can still hear in his voice that the emotion is still there, and obviously the circumstances are really tragic, and I'm sorry about that. What's interesting is that these connections are so meaningful in so many of our lives. And again, here you are in Vietnam. You have the joint adversity that you have to undergo. You have close physical proximity. You're living together. All these ingredients that actually get people to make a connection in one of the most unlikely of places. Who would think that you'd make the connections on a battlefield?
Gary, when you think of him, what do you remember the most?
His humor. He and I shared the same sense of humor. It's a little bit of a bizarre sense of humor. The instance I can think of that is just so typical of him is we were pinned down in an ambush when everything was getting really, really tense. We were low on water, low on ammunition, and he called to me from out of the hole he was dug in on, and I could see that he needed to talk to me, so I reluctantly crawled out of my hole over to where I could get my ear up close enough to hear what he was saying, and he said, "You know, they're right," and I couldn't believe what it was that he was saying, couldn't understand. I said, "They're right about what?" And he said, "It's not the heat, it's the humidity." It just killed me. And I went from being scared to death to laughing and calm almost immediately.
Sounds like a guy well worth remembering.
He was a special human being. I wish he was still alive.
Yeah. Gary, thanks very much for the call.
There's an element we looked at in the book about When something like that happens, like the situation that Gary describes, is something happens called personal elevation. And it turns out that clicking with people tends to really bring out the best in us. And even in experiments where they had a group of MBA students who either clicked together or didn't, the MBA students who clicked together, the teams were much more efficient at their tasks, they were much more effective, they were much more quick, they were much more supportive. And it turns out that there's something about it that, even in a battlefield again, brings out the best in us that we can then endure the situation.
We talked about some of the accelerators for clicking. Similarity is one of them. And interestingly, you'd think that it would be the most profound things that need to be similar. You share the same religion, like one of those emailers who called in before, who sent in a message before. It isn't necessarily quality, it's quantity.
It's a quantity of the similarities, and it can be really silly similarities. In one study, they told people that they had similar fingerprints, or in another one, they had people with fairly common names. So say, Neil, you left a room, and all of a sudden you're approached by someone who was wearing a name tag and also happened to wear a name tag named Neil. So they excluded anybody with weird names like Ori and Ram on there. So because
Neil isn't that common either.
Well, let's say John then.
Okay.
And John and Kelly. So The people who were approached by individuals who didn't have their same name were asked to give money to a charity, and other people were asked to help on a really long paper, to edit an eight-page English paper. And who the heck wants to do that, right? That just sounds horrible. And most people kindly refused. But all of a sudden, when you're approached by someone who has the same name as you, the chances of you actually being willing to actually give a donation or edit their paper doubles. And seeing someone who's similar to us, we all of a sudden think that they're more moral, more good-looking, more generous. All of a sudden, we ascribe all these attributes to them. And the same thing happens with astrological signs. The same thing happens with fingerprint patterns.
There was one experiment you did where a woman, you had five different women, and they spent different amount of times in classes, never saying anything, never interacting with anybody. And afterwards, you showed them the pictures of the people, and they said, what do you think of this person? Do you know this person? And hardly anybody recognized them. But nevertheless, if the woman who'd been there the most, not reacting to anybody, got all kinds of great remarks for her attractiveness, and they were all about the same attractiveness level going in.
Right. It's absolutely amazing. And so none of the students remembered her, and she was actually instructed by the researchers, this was in Pittsburgh, to basically be a snob, so that if anybody approached her and talked to her in class, she was supposed to just ignore them completely and not make eye contact, just basically sit there so people see her. So just exposure of being exposed to someone 10 times as opposed to 5 times or 15 times instead of 10 times, all of a sudden skyrockets just how we look at that person. So it really brings to mind whether you're at work or with friends, about the importance of just having someone
see you.
Yes. Yeah, just showing up.
We're talking with Ori Brafman about his book, Click, The Magic of Instant Connections. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go next to Janine. Janine with us from Mountain View, California.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to tell my story about meeting with my friend Holly in New York. I got a job as a production assistant on that Woodstock concert in '99 that ended terribly with rioting and all that. But we had never met before. I had never done a job like this before. It was hot, humid. I was all by myself trying to make some money because I was living in New York City by myself, and I was desperate for cash. I took this job, and we were assigned to get the dorm rooms ready where the camera crew and those people were going to be sleeping. So we had this horrendous job of cleaning up these college dorms and getting them ready. We had to go buy all this equipment and quickly set up these rooms, like sheets and pillows and stuff. And we were exhausted. And at one point, we just started cracking up really early on. Something happened, and we just started laughing. And we laughed the rest of the week on that job constantly. Like, we were just, it was hilarious. And this is still, like, the main point in our friendship is we always laugh harder than, we both tell each other, we laugh harder with each other than anyone else. We live on opposite sides of the country, but laughter. And I wonder when Gary said about his Vietnam friend about that laughter thing, I thought that's really a clicking moment, seems to me, with people. And I wonder if Ori has anything to say about that, how laughter can really connect people.
We got you.
Absolutely. I think humor plays a huge part in it. And it's also, in my mind, it's not just a cause, it's also a symptom. So that when you feel that close to someone, when you feel that comfortable with someone, it's so much easier to laugh. It's so much easier to experience back the good moments in your relationship. Researchers found out that individuals who actually reflect on the good moments of their relationship tend to have much more satisfaction in their marriages, just remembering the good times together.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Janine, it sounds like you and your friend have a good time remembering the good times.
That's all we do. It's the best thing about our relationship, the laughter. I have a picture of us on our wedding day where we are absolutely cracking up, and I'm not even sure what happened, but it's a great shot because it captures exactly why we are so close.
The essence of that relationship.
Belly laugh.
Yeah. Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Here's an email from Barbara in Arinda, California. I met my best friend 39 years ago when he was 4 and I was 5. We remained close throughout our schooling despite being different genders and in different grades. I consider him my other brother. His children are like cousins to my kids. And 8 years ago, my widowed mother began to date his widowed father. So in a sense, we have finally become the siblings we always felt we naturally were. So
it was always meant to be.
Always meant to be. It's fate. In any case, the book is called Click, The Magic of Instant Connections. The co-authors are Ori Brofman and Ram Brofman. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks so much. It's been a pleasure, especially hearing the stories.
Ori Brofman joined us from the studios of our member station, KQED, in San Francisco. Coming up, singer-songwriter Tift Merritt returns to the program. Her new album is called See You on the Moon. We'll see you after the break. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.